Welcome to this audio briefing from the Christian Institute. The information contained in this briefing is correct at the time of recording.
Welcome to this Christian Institute audio briefing on helping Christian unions to defend their gospel liberty. First of all, I want to discuss some broad principles before we get into details of the law. Now, I want you to consider Acts 16 and verses 35 to 40. In this passage, Paul and Silas are in prison. They had been evangelizing in Philippi, but those who opposed their evangelism had stirred up trouble with the magistrates, and as a result, they had been flogged and thrown into jail. Now, we know the famous story of what happened that night with the earthquake and the jailer, but I want to focus on what happened after that. In the morning, the magistrates were ready to release Paul and Silas quietly, but Paul refused to go. The magistrates had broken Roman law by beating them and imprisoning them without trial. Now, this contravened their rights as Roman citizens, and Paul and Silas would not accept this lying down. They made a fuss. They demanded that the magistrates escort them out publicly. Well, this alarmed the magistrates, and they came to appease Paul and Silas, and they did escort them out publicly. And this was the equivalent of making a public declaration that these men were innocent and that the magistrates had indeed acted wrongly. Now, from that episode, I want you to recognise three simple lessons. Firstly, there are people who oppose Christian evangelism so strongly that they are willing to stir up trouble with the legal authorities in the hope of silencing Christians. But secondly, aggressive opposition to evangelism is not necessarily evidence that you have done something wrong. The incident with Paul and Silas is not an isolated account in the Bible. The Old Testament prophets, the New Testament apostles, and Christ Jesus himself all faced bitter opposition simply because of their message. So don't be in a rush to think that you must have got something wrong if you've faced hostile reaction to your evangelism. And the third lesson is this. Being a Christian means standing up for justice and truth. Paul and Silas had no hesitation in making use of their legal rights under Roman law. They refused to be treated like a doormat. And yes, that involved making a fuss and making legal demands and standing their ground. But I'm sure that as a result of their actions, the magistrates would have been far more cautious about flogging and imprisoning Christians in the future. Their actions protected gospel liberty. Those lessons are very relevant to university Christian unions at the moment. No doubt you'll be aware of recent cases where CUs have been forced to defend themselves legally because opponents of the gospel have tried to restrict their liberty. At the moment, CUs at Exeter, Heriot Watt, Edinburgh and Birmingham are all facing attacks upon their religious liberty. Exeter Christian Union has gone to court after it was suspended from the Student Guild and has its bank account frozen. There has been huge media coverage of the case, and it's great to see them standing up for Christian students across the UK. They are being backed by the UCCF and the Lawyers Christian Fellowship. We at the Christian Institute are heavily involved in defending religious liberty. A few years ago, we were involved in successfully defending Hull CU, who were being threatened by the student union because it only allowed Christians to run the Christian Union. Well, we helped the CU get a solicitor, and once the law was examined, it was clear that the student union was acting unlawfully. The then president of Hull CU, Alistair Armour, now works for us at the Christian Institute, and he has helped produce a handy guide for CUs who want to defend their liberty. And you can find that on our website, www.christian.org.uk/defendyourcu. Now, all of this may sound very adversarial, but remember, none of these CUs went looking for a fight. They were simply going about their normal and lawful business, exercising their liberty to express the Christian faith, to share the gospel, and to enjoy fellowship with other Christian students. But opponents of the gospel stirred up trouble for them just as they did for Paul and Silas in Acts 16. It was vital that these CUs, just like Paul and Silas, stood their ground. If they had caved in, then CUs around the UK would have been far more vulnerable to these kinds of assaults. But by making a stand, they sent out a clear message to a watching world. We care too much about gospel liberty to let you take it away. And that is a wonderful testimony to other students. For the remainder of this audio briefing, I want to outline for you the laws that protect your freedom to share the gospel and to enjoy Christian fellowship on campus. I should say at this point that the information I'm about to give you is correct at the time of this recording, which is the 31st of July 2007. It's provided for information purposes only and should not be taken as a substitute for legal advice. Now, the simplest law for you to use to defend your CU's freedom of speech and freedom of assembly is Section 43 of the Education No. 2 Act 1986. Now, this states that governing bodies of universities have to take reasonable steps to secure freedom of speech. They have to ensure that the use of their premises is not denied to any individual or group on the basis of their beliefs. And it explicitly refers to premises occupied by the student union. The Employment Equality brackets Religion or Belief Regulations 2003 outlaw religious discrimination in employment, and this covers religious discrimination in employment where one person is treated differently from another because of their faith. But I'm not employed by the university, you may say. Well, that's okay, because the law specifically extends to university students. In important respects, these regulations treat students as if they were employees. And Regulation 20, brackets 1, makes it unlawful for a university to discriminate against students of the establishment, for example, by not giving them access to benefits or subjecting them to any other detriment. So, for example, if a humanist group can advertise its meetings on a university notice board, but a Christian group can't, this would be religious discrimination. Or if your Christian union is prevented from booking a room because of its beliefs, you could take action under these employment regulations. Now, probably, the decision to refuse you will be taken by the student union or the student's guild and not the university itself. But Regulation 22, brackets 2, makes the university liable for the actions of its agents. And you would argue that the union was an agent of the university, and any failure by the university to fix the situation would be a breach of these employment regulations. In any particular situation, if you can't make a case out under the employment regulations against the university, you may still be able to make a case against them under the Equality Act. You can sue for religious discrimination under Part 2 of the Equality Act 2006, which prohibits religious discrimination in the provision of goods, facilities, services, use of premises, and education. You may also be able to use it against the student union itself, since it applies much more widely than the employment laws. Currently, the Act only covers discrimination, not harassment, though that may change in the next few years. You have to prove that you have been treated less favourably because of your religious beliefs, and this includes being denied access to benefits or any other detriment. For good or ill, the European Convention on Human Rights is incorporated into our national law by the Human Rights Act 1998. All public authorities have to comply with it. Public authorities are regarded as part of the state. Now, there is a strong legal argument that a university will be regarded, at least for some of its functions, as a public authority under the Human Rights Act. And the student union itself may also be a public authority. The argument is particularly strong where the university was established by an Act of Parliament, such as the former polytechnics. They may be what are called pure public authorities. The older universities, such as Oxford and Cambridge and those founded before 1992, have a royal charter. And they may be hybrid public authorities, which is to say that not all of their functions are public functions. Article 9 of the European Convention says this, quote, "Everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. This right includes the freedom to change his religion or belief, and freedom, either alone or in community with others, and in public or in private, to manifest his religion or belief in worship, teaching, practice, and observance." End quote. This right can be limited, but only by law and only if it can be justified. And you should be prepared to cite Article 9 against any university or union official who tries unreasonably to restrict the lawful activities of your Christian union. Article 10 protects your right to freedom of expression. It's been used to defend all kinds of obscene and blasphemous speech, but it does also protect the right to preach the gospel. In the case of Redmond Bate, Lord Justice Sedley said this, quote, "Free speech includes not only the inoffensive, but the irritating, the contentious, the eccentric, the heretical, the unwelcome, and the provocative, provided it doesn't tend to provoke violence. Freedom only to speak inoffensively is not worth having." End quote. And since the Bible tells us that the gospel is inherently offensive to sinful man, then that quote is quite important. Article 11 of the Convention says this, quote, "Everyone has the right to freedom of peaceful assembly and to freedom of association with others." End quote. The European Court of Human Rights has considered religious rights in a number of decisions. In Kokkinakis against Greece, 1993, the court said this, quote, "Freedom of thought, conscience, and religion is one of the foundations of a democratic society. It is one of the most vital elements that go to make up the identity of believers and of their conception of life. The pluralism indissociable from a democratic society, which has been dearly won over the centuries, depends upon it. While religious freedom is primarily a matter of conscience, it also implies, among other things, freedom to manifest one's religion. Bearing witness in words and deeds is bound up with the existence of religious convictions." End quote. In other words, the court upheld our right to organise ourselves in accordance with our beliefs and to preach with our words and our lives. And so, religious organisations must be able to maintain their distinctiveness by consistency of practice and message, and that means they ought to be allowed to select their own members and their own leaders without interference from state bodies. To do otherwise would be like requiring the Labour Party to select Conservatives as leaders. As well as citing your legal rights, there are other arguments that you can use. In 1998, the Committee of Vice-Chancellors and Principals, now called Universities UK, produced a document called Extremism and Intolerance on Campus. It was issued as guidance for the management of universities, and it specifically addresses student unions and the scope for abusing the power of the union to attack particular student groups. The 1998 guidance has been replaced by new guidance from Universities UK published in 2005. However, the new guidance barely addresses the work of student unions, so it seems fair to revert to the 1998 document for guidance on this point. And it has some very useful sections which you can quote. The guidance seems particularly to protect the right of students to join and form societies without being made to feel fearful, anxious, or threatened by the union. It says, quote, "Unions must exhibit conspicuous fairness and tolerance in relation to the societies that may be established, however offensive may be the particular aims or policies of that group, provided that they act within the law and do not encroach upon the rights of others or seek to silence others, they have every right to exist and function." End quote. Most helpfully, it says this, quote, we think it may be reasonable for some clubs or societies to have restricted eligibility, say on religious or nationality grounds. Otherwise, it would be open to a group hostile to the club or society to join and take it over in a way that would be quite wrong. End quote. Now that is good stuff, which you can put in your letters of complaint. If a student union has thrown out a Christian group because of its religious beliefs, it would be embarrassing for them to have to explain why it has done something which has been so clearly condemned by the vice-chancellors across the nation. Now, defending your rights doesn't necessarily mean going to court. As I've already suggested, you can cite these rights and arguments yourself in conversation or in correspondence with university officials. We have helped Christian unions obtain legal advice, and so have organisations like the Lawyers Christian Fellowship and UCCF. And solicitors can help CUs write a strongly worded letter to the university or the union, and sometimes that can do the trick. Certainly a letter from solicitors was enough in the Hull CU case. In a case at Durham University, a law lecturer stepped in and the union was forced to back down. I also understand that at a recent case at Lincoln University, the CU again forced the student union to back down when they took issue with the CU's constitution. So you don't necessarily have to go all the way to court, but you do have to be courageous. It's no good being a Christian doormat. What message does that send out? It says we don't care about freedom for the gospel. Well, we do care. And when we stand firm to protect gospel freedom, we don't just protect ourselves, but we help to protect CUs throughout the nation. And we help to protect gospel freedom for the next generation of Christian students. So let's use our legal freedoms to protect the gospel, just like Paul and Silas did in Acts chapter 16. For more information about any of the laws which I have referred to, please visit our website, christian.org.uk/defendyourcu. That's christian.org.uk/defendyourcu. Or telephone us at the Christian Institute on 0191 281 5664. That's 0191 281 5664.
Thank you for listening to this audio briefing from the Christian Institute. More audio briefings can be found on our website, christian.org.uk. That's christian.org.uk.